Hello, 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 and welcome again to yet another very special episode of The Nerdstorian.
Hi.
I think as we discussed from now on, every episode will be a very special episode.
Well, that's what, yeah.
The last three have been.
Yes.
I see no reason to break the tradition.
No.
Very special is true. Today, we're coming to you from beautiful uptown Atlanta. In posh Buckhead neighborhood at the offices of HowStuffWorks.com. And we have two very special guests talking to us on the interwebs today are Sarah and Dublina, two ladies that host a scrappy little upstart podcast that you might have heard of called, I believe, Stuff You Missed in Chemistry Class. featured on a little website called HowStuffWorks.com, which is owned by an obscure underground network known only as Discovery.
just so you know, it is actually Stuff You Missed in History Class. So.
Yes.
So say hi, introduce yourselves.
Hey guys, I am Sarah Dowdy, and thankfully I do not host a chemistry podcast.
You're here.
And I'm Dublina Chakraborty, and I was very pleased to be introduced as special.
This is indeed special.
Unless you mean special in that other way.
No,
okay.
Special is great. And as always, I'm Will.
And I'm Sarah.
And today we're going to be chatting up with a couple of fellow history nerds who actually know how to bring it. Talking history, podcasting, and upcoming features. So stick around. It's Nerd Story of the Fifth, Stuff You Missed Edition. We'd like to thank our guests for taking time out of their busy schedules to lay some serious knowledge on us today. So thank you, Sarah and Dublina, of Stuff You Missed in History Class.
You're so welcome. We're happy to be here in our own office.
Thank you for hosting us at your offices. That's very cool.
Yes. So
we have two Sarahs here.
Yes.
So I'm gonna call you Sarah One. And you, Sarah A. And since I didn't point to either one of you when I said that, this metaphor is all done.
Confusion.
So. Yay!
So, today we're talking origin stories, we're talking history loving, we're talking podcasting. But before we get into that, let's take a minute to thank our sponsors, the good people at catpoodlers.com. Cat poodling is all the rage among people who prefer their cats to look more like poodles. So visit the website and make an appointment with one of their expert poodlers. First poodling is free, and every fifth poodling is 25% off. For a limited time, cat poodlers will also collar your iguana, shih tzu your hamster, and spaniel select species of fish. So visit the website today for a full list of fish.
So, thought a good way to break the ice here might be a little good old-fashioned this day in history, and lucky for us, November 15th has a lot of things going on.
A momentous day.
It is extremely momentous.
Well, I'm excited to hear what happened.
Yes, so, you're welcome to chime in with any interesting tidbits in case you hear something that sounds familiar to you. So
many will be better known than others.
Yes, so Will, you want to start with the first one?
Well, as we all know, in 655 AD, there was the Battle of Winwed, in which Oswiu of Northumbria defeated Penda of Mercia. I know we all remember that one. It was quite the nail biter, but as usual, Oswiu managed to pull it out as a victory in the end.
Yay!
We mark that date annually.
Yes, it's a very special holiday.
Very special holiday.
In Northumbria.
Yes. But more importantly, on this date in 1532, Pizarro is going to meet the Inca leader, say the word.
Atahualpa.
A year later, Pizarro meets with Atahualpa again in the capital city of Cusco, and we all know that turned out splendid for everyone.
Absolutely. So they were best buds.
Yes. But on this day in 1688, the Glorious Revolution began, which obviously affects the United States in a way. So,
somebody, clue me in. What's the Glorious Revolution?
I'll start. It's where King James II, who was Catholic, was overthrown by his son-in-law and his daughter, who were Protestant monarchs, and thus began the constitutional monarchy we know of in England today.
But in a peaceful, glorious way.
Very peaceful. Everybody forgets that they come back and try to take it over again.
That is and
it leads to the Jacobite Revolution and all that stuff, or rebellion. So that's always fun.
One we always get a lot of requests for.
Yeah.
People are really into the Jacobites.
We're way into it.
I think, honestly, it might be the Outlander books. Have you heard of those books?
I have. Yeah, I've not read them.
My sisters read them, and they definitely... That's a really good, like, historical fiction back, like, piece. Characters are experiencing the second Jacobite rebellion, and it's pretty neat. It's pretty neat, so...
Even more special to us as Americans is in 1777, the Articles of Confederation were approved by the Continental Congress. They failed.
Yes, miserably.
But what did they outline?
They said that basically your standard form of confederation government, where the states have most power, the national government has little amount of power, and if my students can remember this, it would make their lives easier. But basically, it did not give the U.S. government very much power. Thus, when a rebellion started, I think it was the Whiskey Rebellion. I can't remember which one it was.
We have to fact check.
Yeah.
probably made it fresh.
Yeah, it's either one of the farmers or the Whiskey Rebellion. One of those people weren't getting paid, so they got mad and got their old guns from the Revolutionary War.
Whiskey Rebellion, another popular suggestion.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Awesome. I loved that. I loved learning that in class.
Anything with the words whiskey and rebellion.
I think it has a lot to do with the name.
Yeah. But it proved to show that the Articles of Confederation needed to be scrapped. Because states were going, no, I'm not going to send you my army. Why do I have to send you my army? So, but... In 1806, Zebulon Pike gets his first glimpse at appropriately named Pike's Peak in the Colorado Rockies.
And he wonders why there's already a mountain named after him when he arrives.
Yes.
Sort of a lost time.
In 1859, the first modern revival of the Olympic Games takes place in Athens. Not quite what we know it as the Olympics today, but it is spearheaded and funded entirely by an Albanian businessman named Evangelis Zappas. Greeks thought they'd look backwards, reviving an ancient pagan festival. Only athletes of Greek ancestry, actually.
They were totally against it, actually. The Greeks didn't want to do it. But this Albanian businessman, who was of Greek descent, just was dead set on it. And he threw all his money into it. Only people from Greece were allowed to participate. So it wasn't what we think of as the actual first international Olympic Games of 1896, the centennial of which was, for whatever reason, celebrated here in Atlanta with the crowd pickup trucks and cheerleaders.
Yes, the opening ceremonies. I remember that's when I moved to Atlanta, was the 96 Olympic Games, so that was interesting.
I remember it well.
going into the city the day after the bombing to go to a baseball game at the old baseball stadium, and I've never seen that many people in my life.
Can you imagine what traffic must have been like?
You were just on the outskirts.
Probably traffic is worse now, just day to day, than it was.
Wow. I remember they wouldn't let people really drive into the city during the games. Like, I remember having to park out in
Austell
Road and then drive into MARTA and then get on MARTA. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Always take public transit. They need better public transit in the city, but yeah. But I did my 8th grade Georgia Studies / social science fair project on the Olympics. I remember that.
Huh. Oh, so a budding social studies teacher.
Yes. Always. I was that little kid with the old Apple Mac computer trying to type up fake history reports. I was the weird little kid doing that. So
used the newsletter format on Windows?
Yeah. It wasn't even Windows. It was this old. It was like 1988. I was typing on something. I can't remember what my parents had.
I think we had a Commodore.
We had an Apple, like a used Apple, that's what we had.
We had like an all-in-one Commodore, which was terrible. I played Carmen Sandiego for hours on that thing.
Ah, yes.
Carmen Sandiego, mm-hmm. That was the best.
That was the best game.
Yeah.
All right, so moving on in history.
Also important for Atlanta.
Very important for Atlanta.
1864. General William Tecumseh Sherman begins his famous march to the sea, which included burning Atlanta to the ground.
Oh, Sherman.
You're burning.
So if you have any plans, people who are not from the area, to tour antebellum homes in the city, you might want to rethink that and go somewhere else. We don't have
that.
Mm-hmm. Everything is gone.
There's no Scarlet here.
Nope.
You did go to Jonesboro.
You still won't find it.
It's supposed to be terribly located, but all you'll find is a Best Buy.
And a Walmart. So, 1920, the first assembly of the League of Nations in Geneva meets. And, of course, we all know that the League of Nations doesn't turn out well because World War II starts several years later.
Tended to divide people.
So, but it does lay the groundwork for what we have now as the United Nations. So. 1926.
NBC Radio premieres with 24 stations across the country, debuting cutting-edge, generation-defining comedy programs that it would soon neglect or cancel, despite critical acclaim and Depression-era nerd outrage via the speedier medium of the U.S. Post.
Yay! In 1939, FDR lays the cornerstone for the Jefferson Memorial, which is I get to see in January.
I'm not familiar with the Jefferson Memorial. What does it look like?
It's like, I think what, like a
Jeffersonian.
It's very Jeffersonian.
Yeah,
it's
like
it has a dome.
A book or something? Yeah.
The architectural high point of anything having to do with Jefferson.
Domes.
Domes, of course.
Yes.
Yeah. All over UVA and, of course,
Monticello.
Right. Yeah. 1943, kind of dark a little bit, but Heinrich Himmler declares gypsies just as killable as the Jewish population of Europe, unfortunately.
Yeah.
We've just got done talking about that in my social studies class, actually.
Yeah. So. In fairness,
how do kids react to that?
There was some crying. It's hard. You have to teach it. And you have to talk about its impact, because in seventh grade they talk about the Middle East, and then they talk about the state of Israel being founded and the connection to the Holocaust. So it's kind of hard to figure out how to talk about it with the kids that young. But
important.
It's
too.
Extremely
started
important.
Early.
Right. And I did a summer institute at the Bremen Center here in Atlanta, a great museum and foundation, about teaching the Holocaust, and it was an amazing experience. I suggest anyone in the area that can go to it in the summer. It's an amazing experience.
Since the Holocaust has kind of made its way into pop culture and into movies and things, mm-hmm. Do you find that they come in with a lot of preconceived notions?
Yes.
Some
there's a book a lot of them read in like fifth grade that wasn't out when I was a kid. The book we read was Number of the Stars. And they still read that. But the book the kids I'm teaching today are reading is The Boy in the Striped Pajamas, which takes place at Auschwitz. And it's a great book, but really, really inaccurate. And a lot of the kids, you have to tell them, okay, there wouldn't be a little boy in the camp at Auschwitz, because they would all have been killed in the chambers and a lot of the kids are shocked to find that out. Like, there really wasn't any children there. And it's like, and that little boy, the son of the commandant, would not have been even allowed near there.
Do they still read Anne Frank's diary?
Yeah, they do. I know that they're getting the kids to read it at a little younger. I remember when I started teaching, it was like eighth grade.
It's eighth grade.
And
mm-hmm.
When I took eighth grade, it was read in eighth grade. And but I think now
I was a little disappointed with the ending.
Oh gosh. It's okay. But no, the kids are with the new Common Core standards with English, they're reading it at like a younger age. So yeah, it's I think I'm teaching it this year, I'm not sure, because I also teach language arts. So but in 1949, Gandhi's assassins are executed for their crimes 1959, be events that inspired, I think, Truman Capote's best work ever in Cold Blood occurs.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the Clutter family murders.
In Houghton, Texas, the Clutter family.
And, I love the movie about the writing of the book. It was Capote.
Capote was great.
Yes.
It was.
Yes.
1969, in the Elk News, the first Wendy's is opened by Dave Thomas in Columbus, Ohio, marking the transition from the summer of love to the autumn of type 2 diabetes.
Okay, so that was this day in history.
That concludes this day in history. I like to use my reverb every now and then.
Yes, you like to use it a lot.
I overuse the reverb.
People just think that's your voice now.
Yes.
Naturally speak with reverb.
All right. So
let's chat.
So how did you guys get started in doing podcasting here at HowStuffWorks.com? So.
Well, we are actually both editors, so sometimes people say, how did you get a job podcasting? It's not really our job. We edit articles most of the day.
Okay.
But this podcast started in 2008. There were a few host changes. When one of them left, she was like, Sarah should do this next. And then when my co-host Katie left, Katie, me, our producer, we were all like, Dublina, sign her up. So, that's basically how we got into it.
Yeah.
So did you guys have any previous, like, working with, like, any aspects of broadcasting, or was it just the love of history?
I'd done a little bit in college, working with the college TV station and stuff, but really I've just been a word girl for the past, however long.
Yeah.
Same here.
So.
I had a few episodes I had done for a podcast that they were considering doing here, mm-hmm. and then a few months went by and this opportunity came up, but no, I had not done anything like this.
Editing, writing, that kind of thing, but no podcasting.
That's our game.
So I think probably where our jobs and our main jobs in podcasting collide is in the research aspect of it. I mean, because obviously writing is very research based, and the editing we do kind of goes along those lines too. So
fact checking, all of that.
Oh yeah.
Sometimes I feel more like a researcher, and then Sarah and I get together and just happen to talk about what
there's
we research.
There's 2 hours you get in there and talk about it.
And sometimes we're researching up until like the minute we go in.
Yes.
Us too.
Dear Lizzie, can we have 15 minutes extra before we record?
Will does freelance textbook writing, so yeah, he understands the research and writing aspect.
Oh yeah, I'm sure.
Yeah. How do you find time to do most of your research? How do you do your research? Like, what's your favorite resources?
It's always kind of a rush, as Dublina has already hinted. How do we find time to do it? I just...
every minute you have, every second. I mean,
We have deadlines with our articles.
Right.
And so usually there's a certain time of week around our article deadlines where it's like, okay, well, I need to download these images. I need to edit my freelancer's article and get it live. Any other time we're at work around that, and sometimes when we're at home.
A lot of time at home.
That's podcasting. And it is kind of a strange thing. You can't ever really stop thinking about it.
Mm-hmm.
You walk out of the studio finishing the episodes you've recorded, and I'll speak for myself. I usually feel like, okay, I need to decide what next mm-hmm. week's topic is.
Yeah.
Favorite resources? We're big Galileo girls.
Oh, I love Galileo.
I mean, we talk about this all the time, but we don't really have a research budget. Mm-hmm. So we use Galileo a lot for scholarly, peer-reviewed articles.
Yes.
Incidentally, so do we. I work at a university also. So
you probably have a really good Galileo.
Yeah. Awesome. Galileo helped me so much in college.
We have the public library version, and I fondly remember the UGA version of Galileo. We have a limited number of books. I try to only buy books if it's something that I would really like for my own library.
Yeah.
But we just use our public libraries a lot, too.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a lot of times we're researching an episode that needs to be recorded in the next day or 2 days, but I usually do try to have a few ideas in mind that I know I'm going to have to do some more long-term research for. Go ahead, check out my library books. Mm-hmm. And then, I don't know, I think this is sort of the main key to being able to do it quickly, just getting a store of online sources that you can go to, knowing magazines that you can search, or I'm always talking, I know I must sound like the biggest dork about the New York Times archive, but I love just going and reading newspaper articles, and theirs is so good because it is all available. It's, if you have a subscription, you have a limited number that's free.
Yeah.
And, it's just, it adds so much. We don't get to use as many primary sources as we would like because these are short-term projects, clearly.
Right.
But I love just being able to throw in a little touch like that, a little quote from an article that was published at the time and see what the take on it was then.
Yeah, those contemporary sources are key for, we love to use quotes from people involved in the story and hear things from their point of view, and it just adds so much more, not just for the podcast, but I think for us too. I
mean,
for our enjoying the research, understanding the topic and just really loving it. You know, I think every week we, as Sarah said, we're, you know, we record on Thursdays, so we're leaving the studio thinking about what we're going to do. And, you know, you have from that, you know, usually from Monday to Thursday, I'm pretty into the research, and you just fall in love with the topic during that time. You know, it's just always in your head throughout the week, or, you know, just speaking for myself, it's always something that I'm thinking about. And those quotes just really make it, you know, bring it alive for you a little bit.
So, what are your, like, some of your respective favorite topics in history? Like, stuff you like to talk about, even if you're not talking about it on a podcast? Mine's Tudor history.
I really do. I like the Tudors too. I just actually finished a book about Catherine of Aragon and her sister, Juana of Castile.
Yes.
But yeah, I think that's always interested me. I've liked the Tudors since I was a little kid. Mary Queen of Scots.
Yes.
The Bane of the Tudors.
Yes.
She's fun. French Revolutionary history. I don't know. I mean, so many different things. Explorers. I really, I love explorers, especially polar ones.
Yeah.
They really fascinate me.
Yes.
Dublina, I think, likes desert explorers.
I do. I just did some desert explorer stuff this week. So it's been on my mind. I mean, I'm really one of those people, I kind of fall in love with whatever I'm reading or researching at the moment.
Yeah.
I know I keep saying that, but it's really true. I mean, whatever I'm working on at the moment is usually my favorite thing, but I do tend to lean toward the spies a lot. Sarah's always like, I think she like rolls her eyes, like another spy
That's
story.
That's my dad.
Or,
my dad,
you know,
definitely leans towards the spy stuff, so yeah.
Love the spy stuff, love the Wild West I've talked about
a
lot.
You do love the Outlaws.
I do love the Outlaws.
Yeah, I love the series this summer. It was great.
Yeah, I think just bad guys, bad people in general are really interesting to learn about. I mean,
another one I really love, and I think you're on the same page here, the literary history subjects. And I mean, part of that is just because we, as we've already talked about, we have that kind of background, an English background.
Right.
We both studied English in college. And so whether it's a biography of a writer, something like that, or even one of my favorite episodes was on the shipwreck that saved Jamestown, and it gets into Shakespeare. And, you know, it's just, it's a wild adventure story about a shipwreck and wild pigs on the island that they eat. And it's just crazy in so many ways. And then Shakespeare is suddenly there. And you really have a knack for those real life literary characters.
Oh, I love looking into the people that the characters are based on.
Yes.
Because I think it's just something that we never talk about that much in English classes.
You don't talk about it
classes.
In English class.
You don't talk about it.
He has a degree in English too, so.
Yeah, and so many books, it turns out, are based on real people. I mean, I guess that makes sense if you ever take a creative writing class.
Yeah.
A lot of the pieces people turn in are based on their real life. So it makes sense. But yeah, I mean, just rediscovering those works through the eyes of whoever, right, whoever's life they right have to be based on.
And
is
I,
interesting.
I think it's fun to get to do it. So if you're an English major, you know this too. When you're talking about some of these literary topics, you can talk about them in a way you're not allowed to in English class. You're not supposed to infer too much from their life history into their work.
Yeah, what is that called?
I can't remember it, but you're supposed to keep them separate, essentially.
Something like that.
Just studying the work, you know, focusing on that. But I love being able to study the person's life, too. And I mean, I know enough not to read too much into what they've written,
sure,
then, but to look at the two of them together, I find really fascinating.
Absolutely.
I tend to like, if I love reading historical fiction, and then going and reading, it's like some of the books, like good historical fiction, like the author always put in the author's note, this is where I got some of my information from.
Mm-hmm.
My favorite is, I read the, A Paris Wife by Patricia McLean. And then I read the actual biography about Hemingway's first wife, and how I could tell that the author really, really did her research. And the biography I thought was better,
yeah,
than the actual book, and the book was great. So I love doing that kind of. Also, I love just reading history books still. Like, I'm reading one of three books I'm reading right now. I'm one of those people. About Jane Grey and her sisters,
yeah,
because like no one realized, like a lot of people don't realize that after Jane Grey is executed, they go, oh well, no more threat from the Grey family, and actually her sister, who has a claim to the throne as Elizabeth's cousin, is basically in prison for
yeah
years. And,
pretty much
yeah
anybody who's related to
yes
Elizabeth
is like,
spent
like
their
you
days in prison.
And she got in prison because she married somebody for love.
And did she get pregnant?
She was pregnant before she was put in there, but her husband got arrested and they were supposed to be kept apart, and she got pregnant again
while she was in prison, yes.
Yeah, in the tower. And
Elizabeth is pissed.
Oh, so pissed. So pissed. So I'm reading that. I just read a fictional book about her by Alison Weir, who's one of my favorite historians.
I was just about to say, I think I had read about that story in Alison Weir's biography of Elizabeth,
mm-hmm,
which is great. And I mean, for a life that there's so much to talk about.
Yes.
It is a manageable book.
Yes. I took British history for a year and a half in college, and so many books about Elizabeth. Like our first episode, actually, just books from that class we did about Georgiana of Devonshire, because mm-hmm I read a book in my undergrad class years ago that I still like adore, and other people that I know have taken the class are like, we still read that book, it's great. And I watched like the movie that that was based on it, and I was kind of mad that Georgiana never aged, and her husband was still the same guy throughout the entire movie. It's like, wait, he's supposed to be 24 at the beginning. He still looks like Ralph Fiennes the entire time. So, Ralph Fiennes in 2008 the entire time. So, so what are some of the, like, what are some popular suggestions that you've gotten that are likely to make it in, like, your podcast queue of things you're going to research? I know that you guys, we were listening to one on our way in and talking about, you get suggestions all the time. So
we do. We get a ton of suggestions, and we wish we had time to do them all.
Oh, yeah.
I'm right now reading about Sidney Reilly. So he's inspiration for James Bond.
Of course.
The new James Bond movies out and everything. So that's coming up, and we've had a lot of requests for him. I think just in the last year or so. I mean, I was thinking about doing them last year too, and then put it down for some reason, and then we got, you know, at least 5 requests in the interim, and I was like, well, I'm gonna come back to this. I think I'm gonna look into it a little bit more. So,
and the book I just mentioned to you,
mm-hmm,
I checked that out because I'm researching Juana La Loca, and she is a very popular suggestion.
Yes.
And actually originally I was thinking of covering
very
her
figure,
very tragic
yeah
figure, and I was thinking, oh, she would be good for Halloween month because it's this kind of macabre story.
Yes.
But once I started reading about her, I was like, no, it's not at all, you know.
It's only
a terrible
it's only
nickname
macabre
for her.
Like at the end when she's just really insane and sad.
Yeah, she is a political pawn, not a Halloween character figure. But that's one that does get suggested a lot, and I think most of it is because, okay, well, her name is Joanna the Mad. You know, it sounds compelling. But then also, for a few people, they know her story is a little suspect. Mm-hmm. So those are two that are pretty sure bets.
Yeah, we hate to commit to too much because sometimes things change at the last minute.
Yeah.
We think, oh, I'm going to do this next week, and then all of a sudden we'll stumble across some other idea and totally go off in a different direction.
That's us. I think our list has changed several times.
All right. So, as we mentioned before, we have two Sarahs present, Sarah 1 and Sarah A.
Figure it out.
But I thought we'd be missing out on a great opportunity if we didn't use this in some ironic way. Give it up for this one-time, maybe only feature. They turn the meter up here. Sarah versus Sarah. We are going to pit the two Sarahs against one another in Mortal Kombat. The game will consist of...
I'm terrified now.
I gotta go to work next week.
I should have brought you some Gatorade.
I know.
The game will consist of 8 trivia questions, all history-related, from all over the map. And whoever answers the fastest gets the point. Whoever wins the most points is crowned champion Sarah of the world.
Yay!
So, are you ready?
There's no buzzer or.
He didn't smack the table.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh man,
I have my coffee over here. Not what I want.
Get some special reverb going in there.
All right. Number one. Which Revolutionary War hero was nicknamed the Swamp Fox?
Oh, I knew that too.
Francis Marion.
At the same time.
Francis Marion.
Okay, that's a tie.
Because Georgia history.
Yay.
Am I right?
And Leslie Nielsen played him in a movie.
And we just mentioned him recently. Oh, it was, we did an episode on Jim Bowie. And Jim Bowie's father, I think, fought with Francis Marion.
Awesome.
Question number two. Who was the third wife of Henry VIII? I think that was Sarah. Sarah 1. This one.
We can say it at the same time again.
Yeah.
Everybody wins.
Jane Seymour.
Yay.
All
right.
The one who gave him a son.
Yes. The only one not to tick him off at some point.
But the one who gets painted into her family portrait when she's been dead for 8 years.
Creepy much.
Kind of sad.
Yeah.
I saw it on the TV show.
The TV show is, I'm sorry.
Okay, question the third. Who led the Norman invasion of 2066?
1066. Okay, I was like, oh.
2066.
It's now the future.
I do not.
Let's say it together. Okay, we both know it.
William the Conqueror. What would his future name be if it was 2066?
Oh, yeah.
Wagwam.
Will see the great.
Wagwam the technocrat. Okay. Who was the first leader of the newly unified German states?
Wilhelm the First?
Yes.
Emperor Wilhelm? I always get him and his son mixed up. The second is with the World War
I. Oh, because he doesn't live very long, right?
No, but his son is the one that's like cousins with the English king.
Yeah.
It's like
he's Victoria's grandson.
Yeah. And World War I's like the cousins' war almost.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're all related. The Russian Tsar.
It was actually the Tsarina. It was his wife, and then.
Nicholas?
Nicholas might have been distantly related.
He looks like almost, I think he's second cousins.
Yeah, he looks like Edward.
Yeah, but they look, yeah, they look like twins, essentially.
But like, I know that it's, that his wife is Victoria's granddaughter, and then Wilhelm II is Victoria's grandson.
Victoria, just so successful at getting her descendants on the throne, they all end up fighting each other.
Yes, yes, that's what happens when you have a lot of kids and a lot of power, I guess.
All right, I just deleted two questions for the sake of time because they were too easy.
Okay.
Okay, in what country will you find the ancient city of Petra?
Jordan.
Which is in Indiana Jones?
Totally. Yes. Yes. Yep.
This famous painting by Pablo Picasso depicts the horrors of the Spanish Civil War. Go for it, Elena.
Guernica.
Excellent.
I didn't know that. I know the painting, I don't know the name.
And I think one of my freelancers wrote, I think I might have had to find a picture of that on Getty for her article on Picasso. So every now and then we do have articles that actually intersect with history-related things. Rarely. I mean, maybe like five a year, but occasionally it happens.
I need more history writers. Mm-hmm. We need more history writers than on HowStuffDoesWorks.com.
We're always trying to get more history content.
We are.
Okay, so in the War of Sarahs, everybody wins. Because we are all special.
Except Jane Seymour.
Except Jane.
She is the definitive loser.
Yay, gave him a son. No. 16th century.
Yeah, childbirth is a good example. Yep. All right, that's all we got.
Well, that was fun, guys.
It was
so much fun.
Thanks again for having us here and for talking to us.
Yes,
and being
you're
such
welcome.
Good sports.
Yes, and we love your show. I listen to it on my way to work every morning.
Oh, cool. Thank you.
Awesome. Thanks. So, and if you still haven't listened to the show, and I imagine there are a few of you who have not, then you should go definitely and download as many episodes as possible and stuff them into your ear holes forthwith. These guys are that good. So just a little business. Remember, you could follow the Nerdstorian on blog nerdstorian.wordpress.com. Email us at nerdstorian@gmail.com or follow us on Twitter at nerdstorian and Will's at Winchester.
W. Winchester.
Yes.
Accidentally
hit the M instead of the M. Or at NerdStorianCast for the show. As always, I'm Sarah.
And I'm Will.
And we'll see you guys next time.
NerdStorian out.
Yay.